Yeah, welcome back. SMX Insider coming your way. We did not have a SMX race or Monster Energy AMA Supercross in the weekend that just passed, but that doesn't mean we don't have things to look at. We've talked so much about the highlights of 2024 this year. Jet Lawrence trying to win the title as a rookie, resurgent, some a lot of other riders, new stars in the 250 division. So why don't we just go the other direction today, JT, and talk about the things that have not gone to plan.
Well, yeah, there's always going to be moments like this, things you wish you didn't say, riders make mistakes on the racetrack, and then, oh yeah, people running onto the racetrack themselves. So it's always fun to look back, and I always think these are some of the most exciting points of the season. It doesn't have to be a net negative. It's just what makes this sport so entertaining sometimes.
Yeah, that's sports. Anything can happen. We're going to show you the definition of anything with what we're going to call our not top 10 coming up in this episode. But you also want to give a shout out to part of the reason we have so many angles of all of these incidents, and that is because we have drones for the first time in Supercross. This is not easy to do. Shout out to Tim Fend of our TV crew, who is working ahead of time with these stadiums, who in the past have never allowed drones. It is often SMX that is doing it for the first time. So that is really cool for this sport, paving the way for others. And also shout out to our drone operators, Chris and Daniel, who you got to speak to as our big interview.
So we're here at St. Louis Supercross, and we are with the drone operators for Monster Energy Supercross. And from my perspective, you guys are adding a lot to the broadcast. We're getting perspectives that, frankly, we've never seen in the history of the sport. And Chris Budd, Daniel Rogerson, both of the two operators here. So how has this gone? We're in a dome here. We have drones going on. I don't think that's something that anybody expected. I know for a lot of these spaces, it's the first time that they've allowed drones into these stadiums.
Yeah, this is the first time that a lot of the stadiums are allowing us to come in and fly. Just like last week, and they didn't give us the approval until 2 weeks before. So we're coming in and we're really bringing something that the stadiums haven't even done. It's been really cool that they've been allowing us. Bell's been pushing really hard. But the stadiums are definitely a really big challenge with how tight everything is.
So does that add a different challenge? You know, these open air stadiums, last weekend we were in Seattle, we got lots of room to maneuver. And here, does the roof add a challenge, or are you guys much more, like, far too precise to have that worry?
Yeah, at Dallas it was really difficult with the big TV. This stadium's a lot higher. We don't really have those issues. But I know for outside, when Daniel's flying on those, like, different heights and stuff, there's different restrictions that we have. But yeah, it's definitely, it makes it more difficult. Just added obstacles.
So Daniel, we're speaking a little bit before, and you were telling me how your drone versus Chris's drone are a little bit different. The speeds are different. How you guys can maneuver around the track is a little bit different. So talking race time tonight, where are you guys going to be doing things differently in the middle of the race, and what cuts are you going to be looking for and what angles?
Yeah, so Chris definitely has the speed advantage. My drone, I have more camera control. My battery lasts longer, so I can stay up for a whole moto. But it's not quite as fast, so I have to cut turns, cut corners to keep up with them. And I fly a little bit higher than Chris, and Chris looks for the battles where I just stay on first place the whole time.
So something I've wondered, and ever since we've introduced the drones to, whether it's Pro Motocross Championship or Monster Energy Supercross, the riders can hear these drones at times, right? Like, how close is too close, and what are kind of the guidelines for that as you're going, like, knowing what's kind of invading their space or maybe interfering a bit?
Yeah, I used to race arena cross professionally, and one of the things that's really important to me is I don't distract the riders. When you're out there doing 80-foot triples, the last thing you want to hear is a drone buzzing by you. So I filmed locally for the last 3 years, chasing all the way from 50s to big bikes. So I'm trying to find a balance where I stay far enough back to where the riders don't hear me. And I've talked to a few of the pros after the races, just, have you heard me? And I haven't had anybody hear me yet. So that's kind of what I'm trying to do, get close but not disturb any of the riders during the races.
So Daniel, obviously Monster Energy Supercross here, but we also do this for Pro Motocross Championship, where I think this was maybe introduced. What are the key differences there as far as your approach and the things maybe you can or can't do in the different venues?
Well, like I said, I can't keep up with them. And so I'll stay towards the middle of the track, and I'll use the zoom to follow them. The drone might stay in the same place, but I can follow them everywhere with the zoom and the tilt of the camera.
So you can get a lot closer here at Monster Energy Supercross to tight confines?
Yeah, without getting in Chris's way. And I think the two different styles go well together. I think my drone is more like maybe a cable cam, like you would see in an NFL game, where Chris is more like the battle cam. He can get up close.
I see. So two different approaches, two different style cameras, which are going to create two different kinds of angles as well. So speaking to some of the challenges you guys have faced, and obviously you're great at what you do, you're professional at what you do. Can you speak to what you have to go through on an FAA approval basis and all of the training you guys have had to do for them to have trust to operate in these confines with these professional athletes and all the fans in the stands as well?
100%. Yeah, when it comes to FAA, we beforehand get airspace approval. When they're in domes like this, it comes down to the stadium approval. And then our insurance, we carry between a $5 to $25 million policy, depending on what the stadium requires. And then, yeah, the difficulties are we can't get into the stands. You have to stay in the confines. There's flaggers around. There's different cameras, nettings like right behind us. So we really have to dodge all those obstacles, or like in Texas where you have a big TV. You got to stay clear. You can't take any risk. It's got to be safety number one. And especially the riders, they're risking their lives out there. We don't want to cause any issues with them. So it's always keeping riders number one, and then obviously all the fans safe as well.
That's a lot of responsibility. I'm just going to say, better you than me. I don't think I could do it. So they're doing a great job.
All right, here it goes. Board is sideways for our not top 10. Speaking of board, we're just going to get this one right off the top. The 32nd board girl at Birmingham, JT, you were texting me about this call before we were even off the air. During the show, you like this much. Let's hear it.
Oh, no! Oh, no! And our cart girl was there on the track.
Now, I just want to explain to everyone the oh, no was for a specific reason. First, it was, oh, no, she's going to get run over by Cooper Webb. And the second one was, oh, no, how am I going to describe this on the air? Everyone got pretty lucky. This could have been so bad. She was totally uninjured. Cooper Webb was figuring 19, 20 other motorcycles were running her over. So it actually turned out okay. She wasn't hurt, but that was a wild one.
Yeah, decades from now, this will be how I remember your broadcast career, Weej. This is right up there with, do you believe in miracles?
Okay.
This is it for me. The oh no, it's in my head way too much. I think about it in random moments throughout my life. It is arguably my favorite moment of 2024. So what a wild turn of events. But again, my favorite part of the entire scenario was your call of that event. And speaking of something that I was a part of that maybe was someone else's favorite call, not Grant Harlan's favorite part of 2024. Yeah, we were trying to get a segment in on Chase Sexton. We were trying to pan to him. And remember, Chase Sexton switched from number 23 to number one. And then, oh yeah, he's going to switch again for Pro Motocross to number four. So we'll try to keep up with it. But switching over to Grant Harlan was not by design. Unfortunately, I didn't have anything to say about Grant Harlan. I was panicking, thinking we were talking about Chase Sexton. But yes, these are the things that happen when television is live. There are mistakes made along the way too.
Yeah, let's hear exactly what it sounds like when that happens.
Well, for the number 23 of Chase Sexton, he's got to find the speed. Excuse me, the number one of Chase Sexton. That's the 23 of Grant Harlan. We're not going to talk about him. But for Chase Sexton, we've got to find that speed he had last year. And if you look at this qualifying, he was fastest 24 out of 34 sessions. This year, 0 for 15. So find that speed, and you might be champion yet again.
All right, tough break, JT. And everyone in the truck. Yeah, the 23 is no longer Chase Sexton. Old habits die hard. Just imagine when he's four in motocross. Every fan is going to be along the fence saying, who's number four on the KTM? Is Baggett back? Is Carmichael racing again? Let's go back to San Diego in the mud race. Look, any championship, JT, that has RJ Hampshire in it, do not blink at any moment. So RJ leads San Diego early. He didn't know what guys behind him were jumping in the mud. They all pass him. He starts figuring out the jumps, starts moving forward, and then throws it away, basically two turns to go.
And here comes Hampshire with the checkered flag almost in sight. Oh, and down goes RJ.
Yeah, for RJ, this was an RJ moment, right? And we talked about if he was going to win this championship, he couldn't give points away in key pivotal moments just like that. And we understand no one wants to win more than RJ Hampshire, but it gets him into trouble at times. And when the risk-reward ratio is not quite there, he's willing to push the envelope anyway. And this time it fit him. It may not be the deciding factor in this championship, but could you imagine if he got those points back, what the situation would look like right now? And that's going to be something he's thinking about all the way down the stretch.
Next up, we're going to go to St. Louis, the most recent race we saw. This is hilarious. Mitchell Oldenburg goes flipping takes a couple of riders down. Not funny if you're Adam Cianciarulo, because he ended up with a sprained ankle. But what's wild about it, JT, is that Oldenburg told our friend, Steve Mathis, he had never jumped that triple all day long. And then when he hole shot race one of the Triple Crown, he's like, well, I'm going to have to try it. Didn't work.
Well, I think there are several riders who would wish he had still never tried it, because it didn't go very well. He came up way short, went over the bars, then took out half the field along the way with him. So this was about as bad as it can go for getting a good start at the front of the very first race of the Triple Crown event. And unfortunately, Adam Cianciarulo is going to miss the rest of the night because of it. Now, we know Oldenburg didn't mean to do this, but that's what tight racing brings sometimes. Big mistakes, and there were casualties along the way. And speaking of what could have gone very wrong and didn't, right? You think about Jet Lawrence. He was able to ride over Adam Cianciarulo's bike in St. Louis. He almost had to ride over his mechanic in Daytona right when the main event gate was about to drop, because they couldn't get that cover off. It all started, they couldn't get his hole shot device pulled down in time. That caused panic of getting the tire cover off and a wheel change. There were so many variables going on here at a very difficult Daytona racetrack. This could have been disaster, but was very narrowly averted.
You know, that's why I say this is funny, right? This is serious business and serious racing. Dean Oldenburg tried to decide at the last second, do I jump this or not? Or the Honda guys struggling with multiple mechanical things in a very short window of time. This is the human element. These are just people, right? So we've all been in some panic situation, not with as much on the line as these athletes, but at the same time, I think we can all relate to how stressed Kristen Ducharme was in that moment, knowing he might blow the championship for his rider if this tire cover doesn't come off when I pull right now. And since these things worked out for the most part, we can laugh at them now and just say that is part of racing. But this whole series would look different if they had not gotten Jet's bike out on the track. And then at the end of the night in Daytona, I think this is even worse. The fans, this is a cool part of Daytona. They get to go to the track and go to the podium after the race. But they did it as soon as Jet took the win. There were other riders out on the track. This was almost a complete disaster.
Yeah, this was very close to being on the news nationwide, because there were fans everywhere. Thankfully, the riders were aware of what was going on. Ty Masterpool didn't jump the finish line miraculously that lap. Jason Anderson was weaving in and out of fans. Aaron Plessinger had to stop at the top of the bridge jump and wait for the crowd to kind of disperse before he could finish the last lap. So I wish the fans didn't do this, but just let's thank our lucky stars it didn't go much worse. And we'll have to see what Daytona looks like in 2025, if this is even a thing. And another race we'll probably go back to is Indianapolis in 2025. I bet Cooper Webb is hoping that Cade Clayson is not there in 2025.
Oh, he's got Chisholm in front of him. Cade Clayson cross ruts.
Uh-oh.
Oh, man.
That is
a really bad place to crash, too.
This had to have cost him some points, right? This was in race one of a Triple Crown race, and Cooper Webb alluded to this incident as really setting him back for the rest of the night. And yes, Jet Lawrence has had his troubles, but this could be the difference in the championship, as close as it is moving forward.
Yeah, Jet has had his drama all year. It started with him and Jason Anderson getting into it, like really getting into it, grabbing each other's helmets, one more violently than the other. We will never forget those growing up moments for Jet Lawrence, because they were coming fast and furious early in the year.
Yeah, it's shocking to me how many of these not top 10 involve Jet Lawrence, and he's still the points leader. That is amazing that he's had so much go on around him and things happen to him, and he still has an 8-point lead, and we're coming off of the biggest one yet.
Oh, down goes Jet Lawrence.
Oh, boy.
And he is holding his left arm.
The Jet Lawrence, Justin Barcia impact, I think we all were holding our breath thinking that Jet Lawrence is out for the series. He's injured, he's down on the track, there goes the championship, and now what? Thankfully, Jet was able to get up. He even finished that race three to salvage whatever he could there. And I think, you know, the weekend off comes at a great time for him. I really believe he'll come back at Foxborough 100%. But what a moment that was. The impact heard around the world, really, and all of the fallout that's come from there, and the Instagram videos and all the things that could have been so much worse, and it was already bad enough.
Yeah, and as you said in our previous show, we know Justin Barcia's rep. he wouldn't have apologized so profusely if he had meant to do that. He felt bad. I'm sure in the moment he thought, I just blew this guy's championship. All these guys are competitive. They're not that competitive. They never want to take something away from someone by causing an injury. And we go to number one on this list. This is maybe the biggest crash in terms of quantity. All these riders in 250 East, they're fired up, they're rested, they're ready. The adrenaline's flowing. Too much, because probably half the field was down in by far the biggest first turn crash of this year, or maybe several years, in Detroit.
Yeah, Seth Hamaker was the first domino, and then he just cleaned everybody out to his right. And everybody got up wondering, who did that, right? Hayden Deegans, he was angry at Tom Vial the entire main event, and it wasn't even Vial's fault. So just an unfortunate race. Thankfully, most everybody got up. I think Evan Ferry got the worst of that. But I truly believe if Cameron McAdoo goes on to win this 250 East Championship, he will be thanking himself for going out, putting those laps in. And yes, was a 15th place result fantastic? No, but it could have been a lot worse, right? Had he been able to continue, unable to continue, lost those points, that could be the difference in winning this championship and not. And it's those pivotal moments. Ricky Carmichael always says, you win your championships on your bad day. And make no mistake, that was a bad day for Cameron McAdoo, but he made the absolute most of it.
If you folks want to know, this isn't any sport. It's a game of inches. We know that. How thin the line can be to success and failure. I asked Hamaker what he thinks happened to start that, and he said, I think my bar got caught on Vial's jersey. And just that little thing, I mean, you know how thin these jerseys are. You know how close he could have been to missing that jersey with his handlebar. That alone ignited a crash that took out half the field on that night. That's how thin the line is, and that's what leads to these types of moments. Racing resumes this weekend. Foxborough, the home of the New England Patriots. Take us for a tour of the Yamaha track map, JT.
Well, we're at the home of the New England Patriots at Gillette Stadium, so it's going to have that football feel, really long straightaways. And the thing that jumps out to me first is there's a long set of whoops. Now, we know the norm for 2024 has been 9 whoops, so we'll see if that continues or maybe they make some adjustments to the track map. But long start, 180 left, long rhythm section. So it is that prototypical layout that most of the riders favor. The one thing we have to watch for is the weather. It has been the number one factor for these outdoor venues in 2024. So does that continue? Do we get a dry event? It doesn't have to rain during the event to have a significant impact on the event. It can just make the dirt a lot softer, which then affects the racing throughout the day and night.
Real quick, I want you to explain why the riders like the long lanes. I think sometimes fans see these football layouts and they think it's worse because the baseball layouts are more creative. And these are more standard, but explain why the riders like long lanes on the racetrack.
Yeah, it's really simple. Two reasons, basically. Longer lanes give them more time to pull up next to riders. And then the football tracks, they allow for more 180 degree turns. The baseball diamonds are awkward angles and they get a lot of 90 degree corners that don't allow for passing. Everybody just sticks to the inside in a 90 degree corner. Where in those 180s, you get big bull berms with the nets in there, and riders can take more aggressive angles and line up those block passes.
All right, we'll be looking forward to that if the weather holds at Foxborough. Here's how you can watch it. First, go to Gillette Stadium in person. If you're in the Northeast, come hang out and watch racing live, or Race Day Live will have qualifying coverage at 1:30 Eastern on Peacock and the SMX Video Pass outside the United States. And then racing begins at 7 Eastern. That'll be April 13th, this Saturday. Again, Peacock and the SMX Video Pass. It's been a really fun situation throughout the early part of 2024. We're looking forward to more of those moments starting this weekend.